$75 for a beer, I'd... Just for your information, this is being recorded, and so the minutes will be available online at the website, and that today is March the 4th, 2020. And with that, I'd like to turn to the community and ask if you have any info. Yes, please.
One person out from Bethesda, but also from here. We're hosting an event, co-hosting an event with Peace on Sunday, March, what is that, 22nd, from 1:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon. Dr. Eric Carter is a national expert and researcher on people with disabilities in faith communities and inclusion in faith communities, and so he's coming out to do another work with us in Seattle right before that, and I invited him to come down here to speak with our community and facilitate a conversation. So Peace is partnering with us. I'll just pass them that one. I don't think I have enough for everybody.
I have cards.
You have cards. Oh, and I have my business card as well. So
I need the air card.
Oh, good. So on the back side is a lot more information with some links and so forth and information about Eric Carter and the work he's done. Most recently, a couple of research projects with 400 families with people with disabilities and also 500 youth ages 13 to 21 with disabilities and their desire for inclusion in and the importance of faith in their lives and spiritual lives. And we are partnering with him following this event. We're partnering with him to do some research with clergy across all different denominations to ask clergy, what are the barriers? Why don't you do better support of families and inclusion of people with disabilities? What can we do to help you do better? Because we really believe faith communities are hugely underused resources for our population, and they just don't know where to start, and we can help them if we know what it is they think is their biggest barrier. So we're working on that. This conversation is really a presentation for about half an hour, 40 minutes of Eric's most current research, and then a facilitated conversation with the community about how can we initiate more conversations with faith communities and how can we help equip and train them and release them to do better support. And then it'll be followed by a smaller group of faith leaders that we've invited to dinner with him for more specific guidance, consulting, conversation around developing next steps for them. So anyway, I think Ted shared this with you last time out, but here's your flyer. If you want it electronically, just email me. It's on the flyer. Or text me. My phone number's on the flyer. And I can send it to you electronically so you can forward it out. So far we have about, I think, about 50 responses, which I think is tremendous turnout for Sunday afternoon. But I'm hoping to get as many as possible. So.
Great. Are there any other announcements?
Well, thank you, Mona.
I do have some tips.
And so I won't give Eric, since Mona did that. But I wanted to let you know that we've got Jerry Clark from PAVE is doing an IEP informational training on communication strategies for families on March the 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. And then on March 16th, we've got Noah Seidel from the DD Ombuds office coming down, and he's doing a presentation on supported decision making. And so we're looking forward to that. And so I have copies of those. And then we are lucky enough that Peace has been chosen as one of the Dine with Intention recipients for the 6th Street Bistro. So on March the 24th, if you want to go to happy hour at the 6th Street Bistro and dine with intent, you will be also supporting Peace as you enjoy your evening beverage. Okay, thank you.
What was the date on that again?
March the 24th. It's a Tuesday.
Anyone else have anything they want to share with me? Okay. Well, we'll go into the first order of things, and it's my opportunity to ask if you would please introduce Angela and give a little bit of background, please.
Sure. So we have a new program coordinator. So as you all know, when Mary retired, I'm now the new program manager, and so we had to fill for my program coordinator position. Angela Gomez is our new program coordinator. We are thrilled to have her. She has a background in Well, I'll let her talk about a little bit about her background, but I will just say she's jumped in with both feet, and we're, I think, to rave reviews from anybody who's met her. So maybe you could just say a little bit about what you did before you came here.
Yeah, so I feel weird having my back to you all while I do this. I'll just move up here. I'm Angela Gomez, and I'm really happy to be in this position and working with this amazing team of people. Like Trish was saying, I do have a background in this community. Most recently, I moved out of town and was the director of an alternative high school in a town across the state where I grew up. I am back here, and I moved here in 1998 to start college here after high school, and so my work has been primarily in nonprofits and with the state of Washington. I worked with a lot of nonprofit agencies, including YWCA, the Wellness Project, Innovative Services Northwest, before transitioning to work with the state of Washington in DCYF for quite a few years. So this is a great role. I enjoy meeting everyone, and I'm excited to meet and work with all of you. Thank you.
I want to compliment the staff, and particularly the process that was used to interview the candidates and how well it was organized. I don't think I've ever been part of an interview team that was that organized and that systematic. I didn't feel comfortable at all because that's just not my nature. I was extremely impressed and impressed with the candidates and also just the entire way it was conducted. It was really nice. We also are thankful right now we have the Teacher of the Year, Amy Campbell. Amy, would you please stand up and kind of share with us your experience and insight and why you were named Teacher of the Year, other than the fact that you're
using it. Oh my gosh, that's a funny thing. Okay, so thank you for having me here tonight. I actually work with Susan through campus, so this is a really cool opportunity. I'm joining you tonight because I am a special education teacher with a strong focus within my classroom, my program on inclusion. And what I'm realizing, in order for me to build stronger community connection for my students, I need to connect myself with the community. And I'm realizing that I've done that to some extent, but I need to grow my capacity for them. And your insight is invaluable. So I've got 12 years of special education under my belt, and I started in a self-contained classroom, and I do not refer to what I do as self-contained anymore. I do a lot of co-teaching. I do a lot of structured inclusion where I'm collaborating with gen ed teachers, I'm collaborating with administrators, I'm collaborating with paraprofessionals and therapeutic staff to make really cool experiences where we're all learning together about each other and how we are a community. The other 620 students in my school are part of the process and part of my team. And so I'm really proud of what I do in my school. As teacher, and also how cool in Washington that out of all those applications, the teacher they picked to represent teachers in the state of Washington and students in the state of Washington this year is a teacher who serves students with special needs. Woo-hoo! So that's like, I'm really trying to represent. And I'm really, like, my voice has, I've been trying to create space. I really am trying not to leverage a voice for the voiceless, but more making a scene so I can pass the mic. And so I hope, you can write that down. We all need to be doing that. Because my experience is as a leader in my community, and I've seen some things that have worked, I've enjoyed some things that have worked, but I'm hearing even more here that I know I can draw on and we can build together. So that's who I am. And as Teacher of the Year, kind of my last piece is, I've gotten to work a lot with OSPI, that is the education agency in Washington, basically big boss in charge of everything policy. And from a system standpoint, that's really cool because I'm starting at the top. OSPI works a lot with the legislators, they're setting the policy and they're funding programs. They're also doing advocacy at the legislative level. And so in the last 2 years, or last year during their legislative session, $25 million were earmarked for inclusionary practice professional development. And this is all money that's coming from the legislature to OSPI that they're disseminating throughout the state to increase inclusionary practice. They have a partnership with the principals and the superintendents, with the Washington Education Association, that's the teachers union, as well as a lot of different professional development agencies. They're working closely with the with TIES and also with the Herring Center at UW. So I feel like we have a lot of good partners, and they'd let me be a partner in that. So I am currently a traveling roadshow. I go, seeing paraprofessionals, teachers, administrators, superintendents, special ed directors. I get a chance to tell my story, to talk about building community, making space, promoting inclusion, and what they can do at each level in the system to center students and their experience. And so I'm going to hand out a card, and it has my email address, and right now I'm on leave. It is a gift. I am on a sabbatical, and so I have opportunity to join the experiences you're talking about and learn from your community, my community, our community, about how we can build a better community. So please invite me, and I'll be here learning with you, and thank you for having me, and thank you for everything you do for Clark County. That's it. Thank you.
Did you mention what school you work at?
Bill Ballard.
Elementary.
Yes.
I think that one of the things that the board might want to talk a little bit talk to you about is helping to create that vision.
Yes.
For employment.
Yeah.
Young, with the students that you have and families. I don't know if you guys want to say anything about that.
Yeah.
Very easy.
That's I just say the younger you start, the better off you are.
Yeah. Very easy. What is the optimum starting?
I honestly think it starts at the home before they get to school, helping them to understand that they're part of that family, but then also giving jobs to them in elementary, middle school, high school, because that's what you do with anybody that doesn't have a disability, and just including them. I really feel fortunate our church has an after-school program, and we have one student with disabilities, and he is just part of the crew. He has been there since he was in kindergarten, and the kids just accept. And he plays, and it's very inclusive. But I say, the earlier, the better.
Does any of the audience have a question for Amy?
Can they have an engagement they want her to come speak at, so she's off?
Oh, on yes. The sabbatical?
Susan's like, keep her busy, keep her busy.
Hey, yeah. I'm Corey from WISE, and I was spearheading a group through WISE. It's a community conversation about disability leadership and activism. And when you said turn the mic over, that's what this is all about. So we're gathering a group of people, there's numbering about 80 now, in a conversation about how we can get people into consultancies throughout different industries and into leadership roles. So
yeah.
I'd love to have you be part of that conversation.
I would love to hear what people have to say.
The community summit is in June. Also, is your sabbatical going to be the end of the year?
Yeah.
Because there's a community summit. Is it in Winnetka?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Winnetka.
Yeah, because it's still very school, so I can't go.
They don't have community summit again.
But that might be something that you need.
Yeah, registration just came on today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, is that done?
We did it.
It's June 9th, it'll be a lovely costume. June 9th
will
be 11.
Yeah,
school's
out the 17th.
Any other suggested events or participation that Amy could follow up on? Well, if you come across, please give her a call.
Yeah. Or email if you need me. I mean, like, you can email questions or ideas or materials. I'm just always checking and looking for things to
use steel.
Good. And that's the email that you have right here, Amy Campbell at Canvas.
Yeah.
Web.net.edu.
Yes.
I just got a promotion here at work. That's been going on for a while. So the county is graciously funding and partnering with the school district in Clark County to host a person-centered planning facilitator training for teachers. And what is exciting is we are in the presence of Susan Cassidy, who is going to be helping as one of the co-facilitators as on this training series, and it's a really great opportunity. Deborah McLean is a trainer. She's a master at the craft of person-centered planning and has a long history of partnering with Clark County. And it's open to 20 people to become person-centered planning facilitators and then receive ongoing mentorship. And then another cool thing about Clark County is there is a history of creating a cohort of facilitators in this community, and so getting the 20 new facilitators into that network of facilitators ongoing. So if you have any questions about that particular training, that's going to be happening in April and wrapping up in May with the mentorship. And Trish, I know you're involved in that too, so if you have anything to add.
I was excited. We went to the special education directors meeting to talk to them about that. Emily came to one, and Kristen and I went to another one. And we were thinking later this summer that we would do something, and then the special ed directors basically told us that they could have teachers in seats the next week, and I said it's going to take us a little bit longer to get all the things sorted, but we've pretty much got it sorted out. The teachers are starting to sign up, and so it's going forward. And I think that the really good thing about the person-centered planning that we hear from the schools is that it feeds really nicely into the IEPs, and this kind of is a more collaborative approach, and you know, just has been really helpful. And then, you know, I think that serves us on the adult side when we get students that are planning for things like employment and also come out of school district with this kind of collaborative orientation. So we're really excited to support the person-centered planning cohort. And we did it for many years, year after year, and then it seemed like all the teachers in all of the districts and all of the land were, you know, that needed it, were certified and trained. And so, not certified, just trained. So it kind of ran its course for a while, but we've done a few since then, and now it's time to do another one because the demand has kind of built up again. So,
I should also add, Narity, we're in the presence of group, and Narity plays a role in this training series too, as a collaborator and a facilitator and a trainer as well. So the second thing on the list of things I'm here to talk about is the Clark County Family Training Series. And I'm just gonna give a little update on that. And that is, this is the 13th year of this training series. My fifth year of being involved as a coordinator, collaborator,
And it's been very cool to see how it's evolved over the years. But it's in partnership with many school districts and Peace and Pave and the Camas Evergreen in Vancouver have been important players in putting this together. And then obviously the county is a huge supporter of this. And it goes throughout the school year from October until April. And what's been really cool is this year it's in a more central location. It's at the ESD building. And it typically has shifted from school district to school district. And I've noticed just in the last few trainings that it's more accessible location-wise for families. And so this month, we just wrapped up two evenings on Social Security in-depth 101 and 102, and we had 79 families show up on the first night, which is a big crowd for any event. It's like a small wedding, so that's exciting though, but it's cool. And another thing that we've noticed too is there's a lot of new families that are coming for this information, and then also we're so delighted to see families. Like there are families that have gone through as long as I've worked at WISE, and they started when their child was 14, and now their child is going to be graduating, so they're every year just getting more and more equipped to support their child into adulthood. So it's really cool to see the growth of it within the last 5 years of my experience being part of it. And then we're always learning and growing in terms of who and how and who can access information. So there's been more representation of families who are accessing information and English isn't their first language. And so we've had some recent opportunities to think about how do we ensure that people that are coming to this training can get the same information in the most equitable way, which is a bad problem to be in the moment, but a good problem to think about as a committee and think about who and how and what that looks like. So some evolutions with the training program over the years, for sure. And then I know there's many of you in the room who are involved in this wonderful series or who have presented year after year in this wonderful series. So if you have comments or questions or thoughts.
I did the training, I went through the series 2 years ago, was it four? About 2 years ago, and it was really valuable information. And I'm glad to hear that families are going back because it is a lot, especially the whole Social Security adult system navigation. It's like I still don't know that I fully understand it.
Yeah. Susan Harold is the assistant executive director at WISE. She's an expert. She's a national subject matter expert. And she has said to me before, we used that through this, you know, you're equipped to talk about it and like, oh no, like I know the words on the screen and I could, you know, direct people to links, but it's really complex information. So it's good that people are coming back. And then another thing that has evolved is the final training of the year, we have a panel of people who are working, talking about the value of employment. What does that look like from high school students that are working to adults that are devoted regulars to really kind of be zealous about their experience with employment. But the last year we had a resource fair, which was really cool. And I'm hoping this year we're going to have another resource fair with employment vendors and community entities. So if you're not involved in the resource fair and maybe you're interested in sharing information at a table, connect with me and I will make sure you're there.
I just want to say that in addition to families that are in transition, oftentimes, especially with the Social Security ones, we're able to send families who have adults back through those systems again, those trainings again, because you can never, ever have enough of that information.
I also might add that when you go to work, when you're first going to work, the thing that happens quite often with me is, okay, I get letters from the state that tell me all the time that you belong on this program, you need to be doing X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I've been working for over a year, so why do I keep getting this? And then when you're converted to just first going to work, they're like, it's like, you know, there's a whole lot you got to still learn because I'm still learning as I go. Okay, what do we do here? Do I get deducted for this? How much do I need to make in order for that? I'm still trying to figure out all that, and it's just a headache. It's a huge headache for me.
it's a headache and you look so calm and collected.
That's what we have benefits planners for, too. So,
yeah, I know I met with the PDR. I know that once. I was going to try to see if I could actually meet with the county benefits planner.
Yeah.
Because I would like to do that.
Well, the resource fair, I know one year you did it at the library, which was really cool, at Elder Room. Is it going to be at the ESB? And then in the evening of the last.
Yeah, so last year we hosted it at Innovative Services, and it was in the community room that backs up. And this year it is in the big, I think it's the Pacific Room at ESD. So the first hour is going to be the panel of people who are working and talking about the power of employment. And then the second hour is just like networking, information, gathering. And the room's pretty big, so we can definitely have pizza, if that's intriguing to anyone in the room. We're like, ooh, pizza and resources. Yeah.
So when will that be? April, but
April 21st from 6 to 8. And I did not bring any flyers for the series, but I'm happy to send David Tree and send a digital copy to anyone who would like.
Okay.
Thank you.
Pizza involved in any time. So lovely houses. I have not seen her for years. I used to work in the first part of county. So I know Susan Carroll quite well. I moved here about 7 years ago, so when I hear the name of Susan Harrell, I'm quite familiar because I know Susan from Grace Harbor County.
Okay.
Because she used to work with Betty Beckett and quite a few people from Grace Harbor that I'm familiar with. So when I hear the name Susan, I usually ask how she is.
Yeah.
I don't know if she knows. She knows me as Dwayne, but they call me Patrick Cantor.
Okay, so
ask her if that rings a bell.
I will.
Walt just asked me if we could post the flyers. We do have the family training series on the website. We can add this one. And then do you have another, or do you have more that you were talking about, more flyers for different events? Darla, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm pointing at you.
I had them. I didn't bring enough flyers for everybody. I just brought the one. But yeah, and they're all on the PEACE website as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I can email them to you so you can, yeah.
Yeah, you can link to PEACE.
I'd like to make a pitch that if your agency has a website that you do the same thing as what the county's doing, what PEACE is doing, is just share the resources so it doesn't matter whether or not they happen to be going to the county website or if they're going to PEACE website or WISE or wherever, that they can get access to this information, which is really important.
I have a problem. What if we come up with a calendar of county events that we're doing and whatever else needs to be on there? Because we should have something like that, because I can never remember month to month what event we got going on. Mm-hmm. Unless I look at a calendar, and that helps me, like if it's something that's important, like today. If it wasn't for my sister doing what she did, I probably wouldn't have made this today. Mm-hmm. So I need something more like that when we have stuff like that out there that can help me with that, if it's possible.
Does the county have anything like that, a calendar of events that touches on not only the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, but also the mental health advisory board or any of the others?
I don't know that we have something that we have currently up on the website. I know that WISE maintains a training calendar on their website that includes trainings that are coming out of that WISE is involved with. So yeah, but we could definitely look into that.
It's just something to think about. Again, one more opportunity to maybe it's a shotgun type of approach, but,
you know, I just thought that would be a good idea because there's so many things that come up throughout the month and there's things that, you know, that I'll find out at the last minute. And I'm thinking, if we have that in advance, then that will help us to know, okay, what things do we want to attend? And if so, something like that, I think, would be a huge benefactor, I think.
Yeah. Does PEACE have a calendar?
Yeah, we have a calendar on our website, and we put on not only PEACE information, but all the information that we get funneled to us through all the different ways so that yeah. we're sharing everyone's information.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that that might be, because I think the county might have, you know, want to just have, like, county-sponsored things mm-hmm. out there or something, mm-hmm. but PEACE might have a little more flexibility yeah. to do lots of different things.
Yeah, I mean, okay, any other questions from the board or from the audience? Okay. Emily, I'm going to tag you again, and Jim, you're going to be sucked into this conversation in a very good way, is that Employment Awareness Month and the activities that we normally do.
I brought notes.
Would you please?
From the, a few previous conversations that the board has had. Mm-hmm. So I can share that. And then maybe you can give an update about anything that you guys have going on.
Yep. October 7th, if it's not ingrained into your calendar, please.
Well, wait, before you say that. Let Emily.
Yes.
Hey, give me some news.
Okay.
Please. Well,
sorry.
No, I'd rather have you do that. Yes.
So we have the good fortune to once again get to collaborate with you all on this fun event. And last year was just such a great month. I feel like the event was just, I mean, every year it seems like it's such an energizing thing for the community. Having Temple Grandin come and like Trudy, however yeah. did you pull this off? The Ag is still hearing feedback from people occasionally about the event and also about both events, the movies. Yeah, it was a really cool month. So I am going to be off on a moving target date of being adding a new addition, a new family member to my world. Tentatively at the end of March. And so Jim Corey, who has helped with this event for many, many years and has been a great mentor to me, is jumping in to work with the committee in my interim and then also overlapping when I come back in July. And so, Jim, I'll let you add anything, but I think the date story is an important one. So while you're saying October 7th, let's all save it. So before I was in this role, this is going to be a long life story, but there had been conversations with the Heathman Lodge, where the event has previously taken place, mm-hmm. to reserve the ballroom for 5 years, and it's reserved. But we learned this year that it was a tentative reserve, and
not
so
yes. I believe were the exact words.
Yes, and so we just found out, I think it was last week, and there's emails going back and forth about availability, and just I think today or yesterday there was a new date that was pitched, but the only available date in October at the Heathman Lodge at the ballroom is October 9th, which is a Friday. And historically, I believe the event has taken place on a Wednesday. So that gives the board and committee members some things to think about. Is the Heathman the place, and is it on a Friday, or should we look at other community spaces that can house, you know, 300 people that are really energized, and there's a nice setup in that same week on a Wednesday. So that's something. But right now, the Heathman is holding the 9th, and they are waiting to hear back. That's something else. And then, Jim, anything you would like to add?
Yeah, I'm excited. I got to run the event when I was back to Hilton, and then when we switched up to the Heathman for, I think, 3 or 4 years. Thoroughly enjoyed working with DDAP. You guys are rock stars. And so I'm going to jump in with both feet, and we'll put together a meeting, and I do your will. So you guys are great, creative people. So I look forward to what you can come up with this year.
Well, let's start with the date and the venue. Are there any comments pro or con regarding a Friday afternoon event? And yeah, go ahead.
Well, and it may or may not. I know we've been trying to get more students from like the transition environmental, any education staff and or students. And historically, that second Friday in October, which would be the 9th this year, is a state in-service day. So it's a non-contract day, which means it's a three-day weekend for kids and families. It's teachers are sometimes at workshops, hither and yon, and some teachers aren't. And so within that advance notice, we could maybe capture an audience out of transition programs and stuff, but that is historically the date of the statewide in-service.
But I'm sure that if I ask my boss might be able to give me like on Friday night off or something, if I just explain what's going on.
And I would just like to remind the board that the candidates forum is scheduled for October the 15th at Clark College, which is that following week. Mm-hmm. It's also the day ballots are mailed out. So.
Okay. So we don't want to touch the 15th.
No.
And
are there any other venues that can hold that?
Exactly.
Clark could.
Possibly Clark College, is that?
Kaiser Hall.
Kaiser Hall, is that what we're referring to?
Because the same place you do that.
I was just there on Sunday and it was seated for 400 people, easy. Mm-hmm.
That's what tables is, isn't it?
No. There were not. They were on the sides.
And they have a great culinary program.
Yeah. And Kelly Love is there now.
Well,
yeah.
Oh,
yes, she is.
Would there be any conflict with regards to parking and access given the school year issues?
I would think if it's a Friday or a Thursday, I mean, in the evening, because you'd have better
Wednesday,
but it would be better in the later, because I think most of the school would be done. Yeah, not quite in parking lots.
Our, we do our candidates forum starting at 5 or 5:30, and parking's never been a problem at that time, but it's later than what you typically do your program.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I can reach out to Clark and with Geyser Hall and just check.
It's our Penguin Union building. And it, I don't know if they still call it Geyser Hall.
They call it Geyser Hall.
That specific part of the building. It's gone through an expansion since I was a student there.
Right. So there sounds like there could be a possibility of changing the venue to Clark College and possibly keeping Wednesday, October the 7th. As the date.
Yeah. And it has good bus
service. Yes, it does have good bus service.
And would we want to look into some options in case Geyser is not available?
Yes.
And maybe, what else? If there's anything else
at Clark or just in community?
Just in the community.
Somewhere. Yeah, and if people have ideas locally of large, wonderful spaces that are kind of swanky. let me know. I feel like from the other side, the Hilton was great, but then it got too small, right? The space, is that why it switched?
Well, I think that also the board recognized the Heath and Miles commitment to supportive employment and wanted to support that.
So maybe you can go to Clark and now put a little pressure on them?
I don't know. Well, Clark has employees.
Do they?
They have somebody right now. Yeah.
They actually won an award last year. Or they were featured in a video and had a nominee as one of the employees of the year.
Yeah. And they actually have a location on both sides of town, so there's the main campus. Mm-hmm. But they have a pretty big space on the other side of town as well.
And thinking, I think that in the past, the board has really emphasized accessibility, mm-hmm.
bus line access, parking, and things like that. Are there other things that we kind of think of for a location? It's been a while since we've had to think about it.
What are some other venues that are of that same size, that are 300 or so?
Well, the school districts have auditoriums, but they're maybe not necessarily swanky. So like Skyview High School in Temp Creek, they have a huge auditorium. Fort has a small one. Camas High School has a huge one. But Camas High School's not on a bus line, so. And that goes.
The Hilton is a nice big ballroom, but and it's close to the downtown area, but if you had recently gotten rid of them, I don't know if you'd be going back. But it does, their ballroom is quite big.
We did not burn any bridges.
No. It's a big, tiny room. And I threw up swinging. You guys,
you want people to feel honored,
though. You want to find a space where people feel elevated, because they should.
So I guess at this point in time, at this level, we're going to try to keep the October 7th date and just move it to the Clark College Geyser Hall venue, if it's possible. Could you give us a timeline of how quickly do you think you could find out that that would even be a possibility so we go to the backup position?
Yeah, so I'll reach out tomorrow. So then, and see, hopefully, yes, it's a quick turnaround on their end, but my guess is by the end of the week, I'll have information.
Great, okay.
And what I'll do to be just proactive is with the Heathman, I'll just keep them holding that date, so we have that optioned away as well, too.
And you have the boards, the committee members are on the notes, and you have contact information for everybody so that you can be doing communications.
Yeah, and that's something too, Jim and I were talking about on the top of our list, is making sure that we coordinate a meeting with the committee members to make sure we get planning, and hopefully that overlaps with the timeline still here, and if not, Jim will be coordinating.
Could you reach out again and send emails to the board with dates so that we could have a meeting? I know you did try for today, but it just didn't work out. We now know that it has to be after business hours for at least Luann.
And you guys all know, I think, this is the 20th anniversary of the event. And so, Jim, I don't know, has Wise always been a partner with?
No, Paul Johnson did it before.
Because we've been talking about having like a image, a perspective of how the event has grown. Mm-hmm. Trish has reminisced through some old pictures that she found that has like 60 or so people in a room. And now we're up in that, 300 or so. It's being able to put, it would be cool to put something together that just shows how the event has evolved.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We're almost about the year this year.
Yeah, that might be something we can work with Mike Ferry on, too, to do something.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of footage. We have CBTV there.
I
don't know if you have all the 20 years, but at least the last 14 years, I know we have.
Special interest in the paper, or maybe media coverage of that, profiling the employers and the diversity of different types of occupations, instead of being typecast to a particular trade or industry, that hopefully we can give off the reality, which is that it's more than just service industry, more than just X, Y, and Z.
You have some of the best success story videos that exist, I think, in the country from that event.
Good.
Yeah. We're directing people from all over the country to them because they're so well done, and they show a variety.
Good.
Since it is the 20th, even if Temple can come back, but maybe she could do something on Vimeo that we could add.
Judy, who else you have in your pocket?
Could you just check with her again?
Beyonce?
I'll check with Temple again on that. I know we had to request her sooner rather than later because she's a professor, so she's really busy and she also does a lot of speaking engagement. But we got her last time, we were fortunate because she was coming into town because she's going at the Oregon Convention Center. So we piggybacked off of that event, so we didn't have to pay for any of her airfare, we didn't have to pay for her hotel, we just paid for her to come give a presentation, and then she spoke to the public after and did a book signing. So we only, you know, so the amount that we paid, if we got her and she wasn't, and we weren't piggybacking off of an event, we're going to have to definitely pay some more.
And since she's been out here just last year, it could be fresh in her mind that she probably would be nice about it, maybe. If she has time. And she can make a video that we could add to ours.
I'll more so check once we lock in the date so that I can tell her which date being here. Because that's important too, to know exactly what date it's going to be.
So, as I know, I found out about this event, and there was like a press release in the Columbia last year, and Chris had mentioned it to me. But I think if you were the Columbia, it would be a nice like feature in the Columbian playing out, maybe for a few months even leading up, or a few weeks leading up, because you know they usually have space for community articles, and you could maybe do like, I don't know how soon you know the stories.
I was thinking about this, and you have a lot of employer awards that you've already given, so it might be a good retrospective to show the employers that have won the PET award in the past, employees of the year, while we're developing the next group of winners, display the ones who've already won, and that'd be really kind of build up.
So Katie Gillespie is the ed reporter at the Columbian, and I've worked with her on a few articles now, and she does a ton of work reporting at Clark, reporting in our community, but I think if you could tie it, she's an ed reporter, but the idea of how this is a long-term vision. We're starting at the very early age so that we can achieve this vision, a pitch like that, that says this is about education because it's about the services that get our children to where they are today, and the our local community that celebrates or that supports that, I feel like she might be able to do something with a lot of lead time. Yeah, Katie Gillespie.
Would you love to do one introduction?
Yeah. I retweet her all the time.
Employer profiles.
Yeah, something.
You know, a sequence of articles or just simply a listing of a photograph of the principal of that company.
Yeah.
And, what they do and stuff like that.
Build momentum leading up to it and energy.
But I think starting 20 years ago to highlight the jobs that were available to compare to what is available now.
In the 20th year in 2020, there's magic.
I know. As well as maybe some of the supported employees that are still employed with the same jobs.
Have you been told what the Department of Labor's tagline or messaging is going to be this year?
I think it comes out a little bit later in the summer. Yeah, in the summer, but that's hard.
Maybe we can come up with something that they're going to escape with that ability.
Well, we were trying to use that same tagline for a couple of years.
Inclusion drives innovation.
Yeah.
And last year we chose not to go with the big one and go with the everyone in Vision Drives Innovation. Something about vision, actually, one of the Peace staff, their high school student, was wearing at the Temple Grandin event, 2020, the class with the best visions. I'm like, oh, let's all jump on this bandwagon, because it's the only time in our lives we can. It's free marketing.
Or saying
roaring 20s.
One of the other things, as I'm looking at this list, are dignitaries. I'm looking at Dara right now because she's involved a lot in the political process. Are there particular state representatives that we should be targeting now with the Save the Date campaign?
You know, I would suggest we wait until after next week. We're not quite done yet. So, but yeah, there's a couple that's kind of stepped up to the plate that's doing some good work. So let's see how they carry in the ball at the end of the game.
Any other dignitaries? I know we have Temple, but are there other notable celebrities that we can try to encourage that they participate?
I don't know. She's not so much a celebrity, but there is an individual who I have who I can get in contact with her. She used to work at Nike, and now she has a design school. And her students designed they did a presentation for Nike where it was a apparel line for individuals with developmental disabilities. I know Emily has spoken with her, and Emily, you know, really enjoyed speaking with her. So her name is Angela. So it's just someone that I also know of. That's a suggestion.
Sure.
One thing I thought that was a cool twist last year was making sure we had more involvement and representation on the panel of people who were involved, people with disabilities, and Charles, who was the award winner of the Employee of the Year, helped to present the award. So thinking about like how we're ensuring what that looks like carrying forward, and I think is a cool conversation to have.
One of the things that is part of this whole thing, which is the endorsements or the proclamations, and ramping up to that a little bit earlier than we did last year, the fact that we had some proclamations issued after the event took place in the early part of October, I think is having also a larger group of individuals attend those ceremonies that occur with the different city council meetings. And that would include yourselves, would also include members of the board, would also include consumers. And so if we could possibly focus our efforts in having these proclamations in advance situated so that we could have them in the end of September, so that it's more relevant given the fact it's the month of October.
It would be great if we had the people that received them last year go out and get the ones for this year.
The award recipients? We can certainly see, talk with the local jurisdictions about finding out when we can do the proclamation, or when they can do the proclamations, and we can work towards getting those earlier. In the end, it is up to the local jurisdictions to decide when they want to do things. So we can talk with them and talk with the board. Would love to see this, leading up to October. The other thing that actually I feel was really kind of fruitful that the board recommended last year was the school boards, getting in front of the school boards. And what we did, it was kind of later in the process that we initiated that. And so we were able to, I know that Mary got in front of one of the local school boards, and we hand-delivered invitations to the event to the rest of the school boards. And we did have a number of school board members that came to our event. And so that was, you know, I think that, that was definitely a good thing, and that that's another kind of public opportunity to promote the event, spread awareness, where and all of those boards have community input time. So to do that during that community input time, you know, could take a few minutes to talk about the board and what y'all do and invite people to the event.
If I could maybe ask the teacher of the year spearhead that particular endeavor, I think that that would open the doors much more quickly than a retired transit guy, you know, somebody like that. If you could help us.
Well, I was thinking about how you would want to message this to school board, because I think that school board members are really, in my experience, I've been to a few school board meetings, and the community section is always, it's good. I mean, they need to hear what's happening, they want to hear what's happening in the community because they're part of the community, but they don't always see all the working pieces. And I think that, especially populations of people who have disabilities, the school board wants to usually, in my experience, ensure equity and access, but they don't know how to be supportive. And so being able to offer this as a gift, like, we know you want to help, we know you want to have vision, we know you want to inform yourselves, here's an opportunity, I think people will be very receptive. But I think, I don't know if there was, if you have like a comms team and a budget for this, but if you could take last year's video and chop it into like a 30-second commercial that you could email to every special ed director. That just, I mean, I show that video to people I work with all the time. I would just say, to say, look it, we're talking about our community. We're talking about people achieving success. But if you could just have 2020 go across the screen and talk about celebrating, look at what we're celebrating. Here's a party you haven't been to before. Mm-hmm. And you sent that out to every special ed director and school board member, you wouldn't even necessarily need to hit the farther out districts. I think you'd get people.
I think that it's really good to connect. I went through your school system, and I'm now employed, because to me that's kind of a lost link.
Yeah, I think we need to keep connecting this back to. This is not a disjointed or disconnected thing that's happening. If we're not investing early and with a vision for this.
And I think also acknowledging the teachers and the assistant teachers, so that as I'm at Evergreen School District, or if Evergreen School District meets the transition team that is helping their school district, there's more of a connection between what we're doing. And you know, the Evergreen one, you have Vancouver. You wouldn't want to have Evergreen transition teachers at the Vancouver school district, because there could be a fight, you know, the sharks or whatever.
I think that that's such a critical link, because they, you know, it would be great if some of them even employed somebody at the district that went through or encouraged them to do that in some way.
And not only that, we then could use that 30-second commercial type thing to start showing at the birth to three and three to five programs, to start teaching the parents early on, look what expectations you could have.
Well, I think we have some good synergy going. Is there any other suggestions from the board? We'll be working with Jim and Emily, you know, remotely. And telepathically.
We want to expand this. How far out do you want to expand this, Walt?
Clark County.
Just in the Clark County general area, or do you want to go outside of the county?
No, just in Clark County. That's our jurisdiction, so to speak.
So beside Clark County area, so we'd say about how far out, like this Woodland, that's in the Clark County boundary.
Portions of Woodland are within Clark County, so it'd be, yeah.
I think that's always good to know. They don't know about those things out there, so.
Right.
Better word by that.
Well, you have a lot of people that live in Woodland that work in Clark County. I know that given the housing prices, a lot of people are now buying homes in Woodland and commuting into Clark County. So there's this.
That's what I did. I bought a house in Woodland and commuted back into Clark County.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've gone to the city of Woodland in the past.
I wasn't saying Woodland.
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 City of Woodland.
Yeah.
For a proclamation.
For a proclamation. That's what I was just thinking.
I wasn't thinking of the city of Woodland for a proclamation.
But we could. You know, that's something that's a good idea because it wouldn't hurt because, you know, I mean, what better way to, you know, get them introduced to us and get them on board, you know, get what we're doing.
Well, keep in mind, this is a Clark County event, so.
We also have not contacted La Center in the past, and that was one that was on our radar for doing last year, but I think we ran out of time. So I think that would be one to look into this year.
There's also a transition program in Woodland that many of our northern rural school districts send our kids to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, next on the agenda is value-based agreements.
Thank you. So I'm going to hand out, this is a draft document, so I'm just going to keep it with the board up here for taking a look at. Sorry, guys, we'll get more out later on that. The value-based payment project, some of you have heard me talk about, if you are with Developmental Disabilities Administration or our employment agencies. I may have even talked to the board once before, but I just wanted to give an update on it. It's a pilot project that we're really excited about taking part in Clark County. It is going to partner with OSPI, school districts, employment agencies, DVR, DDA, all the big players in one big sandbox.
We have
some extra. Do we? Okay, well,
I think we can
pass them out.
Yeah.
Maybe like one towards I think, yeah, if you wouldn't mind. Do you have one?
Oh,
do you want one?
Sure.
Yeah. Can I steal this one?
Oh, there you go.
Okay, sorry. So what this is going to do, it's not intended to change anything that's currently going on. It is intended to dovetail with or supplement. And it will allow our employment agencies to develop a relationship with school districts and have some supports with students in those school districts in their second to last transition year. So for kiddos that are graduating in 2022 from the transition program, we will be ready. That's a lofty, we will be ready by September of this year for the employment agencies to be going into those programs and connecting with students to start doing work with this project. The first piece of that project is something called a Job Foundations Report. And so they'll do, I need to do a comparison of something that our agencies and staff or customers are used to called a VOC profile. But it's, I think it's kind of similar to that. They're going to go in and do some discovery and learn a number of things and develop this report. That report then goes with the student to DVR, and they are able to then engage in services with DVR with this plan. There's a payment point for the employment agencies when they develop that report, and then they do their job development through, you know, the second to last year, through last year. And then there is a outcome-based payment for getting individuals with high acuity jobs at or before leaving school, right around then. So the goal is that they will have a job when they leave transition or very closely after, and there's outcome payments that go along with that for helping incentivize that process.
So, Kristen, will the outcome payment then be a DVR payment, or is that a DVA payment?
It's a DVA payment.
Okay.
Yes. And
but DVR, I mean, it doesn't circumvent what DVR already does with their normal process.
Exactly.
So this is an extra.
Yeah, and there's still a lot. So I've been to two different trainings on it statewide. There were counties that have been involved in the school-to-work programs, mm-hmm. worked with people at DVR and DVA to develop what they think this pilot project would look like. They've trained county coordinators enough for us to decide whether or not we wanted to raise our hand. Clark County definitely is interested. We think that this is great for students and families. And so now I've got my work cut out for me to get more, there will be an application process for the employment agencies to be able to participate. They need to be meeting our contractual requirements and other things, so I've got to get that developed. We need to get back in front of the special ed directors. We've talked to them twice, and mostly it was just kind of this 50,000 foot level. Gave them this information, told them it's coming, passed around a piece of paper and asked if they were interested, and all of them were interested, including ones where now we're trying to figure this out, because Washington State School for the Blind and Washington School for the Deaf were wanting to know how they could be involved, which is a little bit trickier, but we're talking to DVA and trying to figure out what those answers are like for them. So I think that's kind of it as far as an update on this project. There will be more to come. I think it's going to happen really fast. September's not really that far away. And you start backing up timelines for contracts and getting applications in place and all of that, it feels like it's already here. So, more to come. Any questions?
So the launch is when school year starts?
Correct. Correct.
So they're going to grow this. So when it launches in September, you're going to start with the 19 to 21 year olds, second year.
Yes.
So you're not going to kind of hop in over here. You're just going to start.
Correct.
You're going to grow.
Correct.
Those students through.
Yes. The process. And then so if we're in the middle of that one, then coming in the next September, we could grab the next group. Yeah. We're not starting behind the eight ball trying to do the. Yeah. Report and everything in that last year.
Kristen, how many transition students do we have for 22?
2022, there are 55 identified. And I think that DVA has a certain idea of how many we might actually get to raise their hands, because obviously it's a pilot and they get to choose whether they want to be involved in this. But we would love to see 100%.
Are we tracking how many have the, excuse me, because all the terminology just left me, but the DVR that's coming in and working with the kiddos early on. Yes. Those kiddos, so are we going to track how many of those kiddos actually raise their hands for this so that we end up with better outcomes long term from the collaboration?
I bet Sarah Fiedler might be somebody that we could get information, coordinate with.
Yeah. It just seems like that would be a data point we'd want to capture.
Yeah. Michelle Mulhern is aware of it. I don't know if the training for this has been brought down into your guys' level yet for counselors, but Michelle Mulhern is aware of it, and then Sarah is invited to a training that David Money is doing at the local DVA office, as am I, so that we can kind of all get this information and moving forward.
Michelle's the supervisor.
Yes.
Right. Sarah is.
She's the transition.
Transition person.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I've been kind of talking to them about it every time I get their ear. They're aware of it. They're excited to partner.
Great.
And it's just that same, more information to come.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I think that's a good point to see who's involved already.
And, identify our data points before we get going.
Yeah.
Is it time?
Please.
Okay. So one of the things that we found with transition students is that every year we work closely with DVA, and there's a certain percentage of people that say thanks, no thanks. There's a certain percentage of people that we don't know if they moved and didn't update DVA. One of the things that we're hoping, I think, through this project is that we will see an increase in the number of students who are actually engaging with services immediately following school. Because those people that say thanks but no thanks, we will see them later. We do see them come back later and go, oh, yeah, about that thing you asked me about a couple of years ago, I think we need to do that now. So we're hoping that people will engage sooner, the transition students.
And I have your business card, obviously you pass it around, but I don't know, there might be something I might pick your brain about or ask you to get involved.
A strong focus as I'm working with OSPI and the Inclusionary Practice Project, there's a huge investigation of data related to post-secondary outcomes for students who have significant impact from disabilities. And how do we start to shift thinking very early on in our educational programming to No, you belong in the community. You are community. You will have a job. You will contribute. You are a member. You belong. And so it'll be interesting as all of this plays out together, as we start to shift our thinking as a public school system to recognize assets, ability, and contribution. Do we change family thinking? Do we change individual thinking? Do we change community thinking? So it's just a natural next step. Of course you'll go get a job.
And I just want to say, we want to make sure that we work in collaboration with our benefits analysis, because we want to make sure our kiddos get the SSI before they start pulling on any of their own SSDI or any of those issues, or they're going to have trouble later on. And with having the highest minimum wage in the nation, that's going to create a long-term issue, as in, even though we have healthcare workers with disabilities, you roll forward, okay, I'm now pick an age, 65, and I no longer can work, but guess what, now I no longer qualify for Medicaid either, so I can't get any of the other services that I need. So we've got to look at this long term, because we're kind of in uncharted territory, and if we do some of this stuff where past the individual can pull on the parents, SSDAC, that's no longer going to be an option, because our minimum wage is going to be kicking them off of that long term. So we've just got to kind of pay attention to that and really work closely with our benefits analysis, because it's not just where the individual is today or during working age, but where are they when their family member is no longer available to help care for them, and are they able to then get the DBA services that they need and qualify for the Medicaid so they can get those services and supports long term.
And then a question I had for that, Barb, is what if that person's like out of home, they're on their own, like say people that are, you know, the person that has the intellectual or developmental disabilities on their own, they're no longer with parents that are elderly. Like in my situation, my mother and father were both elderly. My father has since passed on, and my mother is in her 80s, and she's no longer able to do that. So what does that mean for like people like me and so on?
Well, and that's something that right now, Chris's DDA and Peace, there's a bunch of us that can help you that need it. I'm thinking about making sure that 30 years from now or 40 years from now, the kiddos that we start, that we just are looking out long-term and not just looking at what's right in front of us.
Well, but see, I have family, like I said, but like I said, a majority of anything that's pretty much done is done by me. Any decisions that are done are usually called through me anyway. You know, I do have someone that's a representative that helps me make decisions like that, but, you know, just they're not going to be here forever, so I'm just kind of wondering, what's the future going to be for that, you know?
And I'd be happy to meet with you, Patrick, and we can talk about things.
And then, Kristen, I don't know, you had mentioned the Job Foundation report, so in that first year. I do know that that there's a new career planner that's linked to our Skyward system. And he's like, that the students can go into, they can log in with their Skyward access and do a, so it's a, it's, interests, preferences, and skills. The skills one requires a little more thinking, but the like the preferences one is the you know the two pictures and it says below would you ever do this or this, and you just click on it and it goes through a series of like 50-60 things, and then the preference, interest one, I think it's like a happy face, a sad face, and a neutral face.
Right.
You know, would you like to take inventory using an iPad? Would you like to greet customers? Would you like, and it's like, you know, and that system is, it's part coming out as part of the Pathways to Graduation.
Yeah.
All this other stuff coming out from OSPI. It is under your waffle and Googling if you go down far enough.
And what's it called? It's,
well, so our Skyward student management system is called Skyward, that the school districts use. And it links to Skyward, and we can get through it at school through the Google platform. And so it's, I want to say it's called...
So they log into their account.
Yeah. So
and then
Waffle.
It's... And then...
They go all the way down to the Waffle. It's like data... information, data analysis, and when you go into that, they have like four apps that populate. One
okay.
is called Career Planning.
Yeah. How should I not know this?
Well, because they just told us about it. We're at high school.
Is this specific to Canvas?
No, that should be, I would think anybody that has a Skyward system. No, any student. Any student can go in and do it. But the problem with it now, at this point in time, is that like what the students do on it, I can't go in and see what their results are. They have to share. I'll sit down with them and look at my computer with them. They're going to start growing it with our eighth graders,
yeah.
I think, next year. And so there will be a way that data compiles somehow, because it lets you go through that. Like, you could do a preferences thing, like, 5 times. And so it might generate, but it generates a little bar graph that says you might be in, you know, like working in the artistic industry. You might, and it shows you how far across East goes. So it is some kind of cool information that's grounded more in reality instead of I want to write movies and make movies in Hollywood. So it gives them some more realistic, and then it links to all kinds of the occupational outlook, and if you want to do this job, here's a place you can go get training, blah, blah, blah.
Cool.
Goes on and on. But right now, like I said, it's just we can't go in and access it. I think at some point in time we'll be able to pull up that report, but at this point in time.
So I want to go home and make my kids pull up Skyward so I can check it out.
Well, it's not in Skyward, it's done through Google. Yeah, but
is it
links to Skyward. They use your Skyward access to get into it.
Is it connected to the My School Data, like High School Beyond plan?
They're probably trying to fix High School Beyond plans, because that's a big problem when you go talk like
yeah.
Your OSPI. Yeah, they're always like, they don't want to write them for kids with disabilities.
Yeah, they yeah.
I think right now we have this database that we can access through Homeroom, which
yeah.
also links
yeah.
to Skyward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in Homeroom there will be a place where there could be like a report of some sort that links in there. That's why we're using their Skyward login to get into the system.
Okay.
But it's just, like I said, it hasn't, they haven't married up yet.
Okay.
Interesting. Very exciting.
It is. Are there any other questions about the value-based payment project?
I just want to say, having started with this in like 86, we've come a long way. Because I used to have to say to parents, could I get back to you on that one? And this is wonderful for parents to see what you're going through, and it gives them a little time to go global and process it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real excited about it.
It also helps you individual during the time that all the everyone else is going like,
right.
What am I going to do? They're going to be there going, what am I going to do too?
Exactly.
Yeah. So
that's
cool.
I just wanted to add that Amy brings a lot of good positive vibe to the meeting. I mean, I'm liking what she's doing, the direction that she's going in. She's got some good, very sharp.
Thank
very
you.
Sharp.
Well, let's turn to Darla and.
Darla, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's okay. We're not. So we have another week of session. Session will be over on the 12th. So the information that I'm going to present to you is as of Monday, which means the whole world has changed and half of this doesn't count anymore. But, you know, this is where we're at. So, first thing I'm going to Let's do budgets first. So here's the budgets. And you will see that this year the Senate's version of the budget came out better than some of the other versions. I found it interesting in looking at this comparison that there was not one single budget where they all agreed on anything with this. And of course, all of this was before our current health concerns on a state level. And this could all change. But this is where the budgets currently are, as far as the governor's budget, the House budget, and Senate budgets. Senate was better to us this year. When we look at questions on the budget before I move forward, do you want me to go through any details on it?
I know there's a lot of sad faces in here.
Yeah, there's some happy faces too, though.
Yeah, it seems like
there's some sad, you know, but you know, hey. It's a supplemental budget.
Right.
Right? It's a supplemental budget. There's been a lot of groundwork laid this year for us to do some forecasting. It looks like we're going to at least get some courtesy forecasting, which technically doesn't exist, but they're going to at least be looking at that. So, and then here are our bills. And I will tell you, for last time I presented, we talked about the Haddit bill, and there was so many concerns. I just want to say publicly that our state senator and our state representative that sponsored those bills have worked tirelessly with the union, SEIU, and with the advocates and the DD people around the state. And we have had meeting after meeting after meeting, and all of the recommendation and changes that we have requested, they have tried to put many of those in. The smiley face on the Haddit bill we've gone to a smiley face versus a concerned face. It still isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's so much better from where we started. And so I just really want to publicly thank our state legislators and senators for their representation on that bill. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that the bill, so I think I also had talked about the changes to the special ed funding, where they actually, if 80% of kids in any district were in an inclusive setting, they would actually receive a higher funding rate. They were looking at changing the special ed funding allocations. Those bills have died. And so that's a concern. It's really a concern for border counties, such as Clark's, Mania, Klickitat, all the way down across Oregon and up the Idaho border, because we are the counties that tend to be over the percentage rate of funding that they allot for special ed kiddos. We think that's because Idaho and Oregon, we have so many people jump the border for our schools in Washington. So that's a big issue for us. But that's where we're at today. They're on the floor. The bills currently have to get passed out of, so they have, they're already gone through one house, they're in the second house, and they have to get passed off the floor this week by Friday to stay alive.
So all the bills,
all the bills are hanging, precariously at the moment.
By a thread.
By a thread, but they've been on the floor for 2 days, they're going to be on the floor for the next 2 days.
I know what that's like, they've never done that.
Yeah.
The Haddit bill, where I have some cynicism, did they actually increase the amount of training that the providers would receive so that it wouldn't be erroneous?
So we are working hard with the union. I actually last week had a two-hour conference call with the training partnership on Tuesday and another one on Thursday. They're currently in an 8-week process of training, changing the training processes for the SEIU individual providers. And so we're hoping that at least for the advanced training, we'll be able to have some input. For the basic training, that 70-hour basic training that they receive, all of that's in WAC. So we're really gonna have to regroup and go back and change it legislatively to to be able to change a whole lot of what's in the basic training without just increasing the number of hours. And of course, if we increase the number of hours, we're increasing the pay to providers, so then it becomes a big fiscal issue. One of the things that's become very concerning or brought to light is that with all of this training, so the all the 70 hours of basic training and then the, I don't know how many hours the advanced training is, but it's like 8 weeks, one day a week for 8 weeks. Yeah, it's pretty intense. And they don't receive CPR and first aid. So, so there's just, they're actually, the training partnership did share that they're looking at doing different tracks based upon who they're going to be serving. And so while mental and developmental disabilities doesn't have its own track, mental health does have its own track. And so, we're hoping that we can have some more influence there. But I don't have hard and facts to tell you today, except that it's in process.
Any questions from the board?
I did want to share a couple other things with you guys, if there's no questions. First of all, I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware that Sue Elliott, who's the executive director of the State ARC, and Donna Patrick, who's the policy person at the DDC, are both retiring, and they have been long-term state-level advocates, and they both will be retired within the next 2 weeks. And so that, we've already got a new leader at DDC, Jeremy, and Jeremy's incredible. But we're just having a lot of turnover on the state level and a lot of long-term leadership that we've had for decades and decades since I've come in to the field. We won't say how many decades.
Yeah, remember Donna and Ashley.
Yeah, exactly. They've been around forever. And so while the people that have been hired to fill their shoes are incredible, and I'm very excited about the new blood and new energy. There's also just a lot of loss of knowledge and history and those kinds of things. The other piece I wanted to let you know is that, and you guys might already know this, but Secretary Cheryl Strange sent out a document in a couple weeks ago stating that they have set up a, let me get the terminology right, a quarantine location on the RHC grounds in Shoreline, where our individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities are. Now, they're 200 yards away from the Faircrest building, but it's the rehabilitation centers, it's our state-level institutions. And so, sorry. There's, you know, again, Faircrest is the largest piece of undeveloped land in an urban city in the nation. The state owns it. It's on the DNR side, not on the DD side, but that is where they put the quarantine area. And so it's up there with our most vulnerable individuals. Pardon me?
Is the quarantine area for the corona situation?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And then the only other thing is, here's my card, which has our website at the bottom of it. So if you want that.
Calendar.
Thank you. Yes, I have no language anymore. But if you want the calendar of all the events.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's there. Questions, guys? That was a lot of information, shortly.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any other items that the board would like to discuss? Is there any additional items that staff would like to discuss? Is there any issues that the audience would like to bring forward? Patrick, did you have something you wanted to...
Yeah, I just wanted to know more about the community summit, more information about that, and who's coming, all going.
I think that we're still figuring that out, but it's just that Chris and Angela are probably going to go. But, yeah, we're figuring it out. Yeah. There is, I can forward the information about the community
community summit. I'll send it out to the board. And on that link, there is a place to request a stipend. So.
Given that we're talked out, I'd like to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.